Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. We also explain words and language rules. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, Dr. Jill Robbins will tell us about a program in Washington, D.C. that teaches immigrants nursing skills and American English at the same time. Then you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. Ana Mateo will present the first part of her two-part report on the very simple word, take. But take is not as simple as it sounds. In fact, the Oxford English Dictionary calls it one of the elemental words of the English language. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we will continue the story of the presidency of Herbert Hoover. And we will talk about the election of 1932. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Many jobs in the United States can be outsourced or done by workers in other countries. Much of the clothing sold in the U.S. is made in other countries, for example. One job that cannot be outsourced, however, is healthcare. That is one reason nursing is a growing job area. Another reason is the large number of aging Americans called baby boomers, the children of the late 1940s through the 1960s. They are getting older, and many are entering hospitals and nursing homes. Now, as Dr. Jill Robbins tells us, those nursing jobs are available to immigrants looking for the American dream.
At Carlos Rosario International Public Charter School, a program started in 2009 to train nurse aides. A nurse aide is a person who works with a nurse to give basic services, such as feeding, washing, making beds, and moving patients. The staff of Carlos Rosario researched the need for entry-level employees before starting the Nurse Aid Training Program, or NAT. Curriculum developer Heather Tatton-Harris explains the process.
We were looking at what the DC area job growth was, what areas, what jobs were growing in DC, and healthcare was one of the fastest growing opportunities for students like ours to get new jobs. And then at the same time, we surveyed our student population to see what jobs they were interested in.
The NAT program started in 2009 with high-level speakers of English as a second language. In 2014, a pilot program began for intermediate-level speakers of English. Students continue to improve their English. At the same time, they learn how to work as a nurse aide. The program combines teaching by a professional nurse trainer with instruction by an English as a Second Language, or ESL, teacher. Tatton Harris helped to design the new nurse aide training class for ESL students. She says that it has two courses.
One course is designed for students that complete our highest level of English, and they're ready to dive right into the nurse aide training content. The other course that we have is designed for intermediate level speakers of English, and that course, we have paired up a nurse with an ESL instructor so that the content is made more accessible to the students. The curriculum is the same in terms of the content, but the way it is delivered to the students is done at a different pace.
Before starting an ESL NAT class, Tatton Harris recommends looking at other programs for ideas.
Look at what other schools are doing. Learn from the road that they've walked. The things that we learned were really important for us. We went to programs in Washington State where they're doing these types of training situations with a ESL instructor side by side with a content instructor. It's called IBEST. In Washington State, they developed that model. IBEST stands for Integrated Basic Education and Skills Training. And it's a model that's becoming more and more adopted around the United States, so that you have two instructors teaching what they know best.
Tatton Harris says the ESL instructor plays a very important part in the program.
When you're bringing a career training program down to a level and helping students at a lower level of English prepare for a career training situation, it's really important to bring in the expertise of an ESL teacher in that picture, because that ESL teacher really knows how to make that content accessible to the students. We find that our content teachers do a great job with teaching the content, but they don't know what they don't know about where the students are with their comprehension.
Laurel Anderson is the ESL instructor for the intermediate level NAT program at Carlos Rosario. She says that the students are different from a usual class of ESL students.
I would say that I'm seeing a difference in the level of motivation, knowing that there is this big Red Cross board exam coming up at the end of the course is really motivating to them. We've got near perfect attendance every single day. I've got 100% of my students here. That's different from other ESL classes that I've taught where the stakes aren't quite as high. So there's an aspect of bringing in the real world here, taking this exam, getting a job after that, that's very, very motivating. So I would say that's a difference from a straight ESL class.
Students in the NAT class practiced feeding a patient. Next to their classroom, there is a room that looks like a hospital room. Students learn how to raise and lower the bed with electrical controls. A teacher assistant checked each action the students made during the practice. Back in the classroom, the NAT content teacher, Arlene Venable, taught students the correct way to move a heavy object. Nurse aides sometimes move patients and supplies. They have to know how to do it without causing injury to themselves. ESL instructor Anderson says the ESL NAT program has required some important changes to the earlier course design. One is the level of the textbook.
Learning how to modify this textbook for different students. I have a couple of students that are struggling with this textbook. And so last week we contacted the publishers, and as it turns out, they offer a more basic version of the same book. So we're going to bring that in and see if that works for a couple of students and makes this information more accessible.
Language teaching in the program also changed. Anderson says the course started with an importance on the students' speaking skills. The idea was that the students should be able to speak clearly to patients and fellow staff members.
That was a big focus when we started out, and then learning along the way that reading comprehension was also a big, big part of what I need to be focusing on. So we've adjusted their more reading strategies and comprehension activities to help them process all of this material. That's been a bigger focus this semester.
Tatton Harris says the ESL NAT program also had to change the timing of presenting new material.
I think pacing was one thing that we learned in terms of how quickly and or how much time needed to be spent on certain topics.
Tatton Harris adds that the ESL NAT program has been learning better ways of showing student progress.
We also learned how to keep track of where students are in their learning better. We're capturing more data about how they're doing on their quizzes, how they're doing in the lab, how we use technology to capture that. So we record our students by video and they can reflect on what they see in their own recording, as well as the teacher can watch them do skills through that recording and evaluate that. So all of these things we are sort of learning through experience.
In the next education story, we introduce two students in the Carlos Rosario Nurse Aid Training Program. Other stories will present the school's Culinary Arts Program. I'm Jill Robbins.
Thanks, Dr. Jill. Now it's time for Words and Their Stories. Today, Anna Mateo and Jonathan Evans present the first part of a two-part report on the word take.
Many expressions using the word take first appeared in American English years ago and have not changed at all. For example, the website Etymology Online says the saying, take it or leave it, was first used in the late 19th century. But you can find this phrase commonly used and in many different situations. The phrase, to take it out on someone or something, means to express anger at someone or something. It is a sign of misplaced anger. One website says, this expression was first used in 1840. Today, you can often hear it in conversational speech.
Let's say your friend lost his job. He is angry and shouts at you for something unrelated. You can say to him, "Look, I know you're upset, but don't take it out on me. I didn't fire you." Taking it out on someone is very different from having a give and take with someone. Give and take is the process opposing sides go through to reach an agreement. It's a compromise. Both sides give up something they want, but also take something they want. Give and take can also mean the act of exchanging ideas or comments.
If you take after someone, it means you seem to be like them in some way. If Felix is very much like his father, you could say he takes after his father. If you are simply taken by someone, you either show complete respect for or are totally in love with the person. For example, she is really taken with the new man in the office. He is all she talks about.
Take can also be used as a noun, and it has several meanings. Take can be money collected during a performance of something. If you are a criminal, your take is your share of what was stolen. But when using the word take, the situation is very important. If I ask you what your take is, I am asking for your opinion about something. For example, give me your take on this year's election. So, do you see what we mean? The word take has so many uses. You can take our word for it. That means you can trust us.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
Next week on this program, Anna and Jonathan will tell us more about the word take. Their reporting doesn't take a back seat to anyone. I hope you'll take that into account. But don't take my word for it. Listen to part two of their report right here next week. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we continue the story of the presidency of Herbert Hoover, and we will talk about the election of 1932. President Hoover worked hard to rescue the American economy following the crash of the stock market in October 1929. Within a month, he called the nation's business leaders to the White House. He told them, "Don't lower wages." Hoover called on the bankers at the Federal Reserve to make it easier for businesses to borrow money. He tried to provide funds to help farmers get fair prices for their crops. He pushed Congress to lower personal taxes. And above all, the president urged Americans not to lose hope in their economy or in themselves. Now, with more of this story, here are Bob Doty and Steve Ember.
The economy was in ruins, falling faster with each passing day of the crisis that grew into the Great Depression. The value of stocks had collapsed. Millions of workers lost their jobs. The level of industrial production in the country was less than half of what it had been before the stock market crash. Hoover's efforts were not enough to stop the growing crisis. In ever greater numbers, people called on the president to increase federal spending and provide jobs for people out of work. But the president was a conservative Republican. He did not think it was the responsibility of the federal government to provide relief for poor Americans. And he thought it was wrong to increase spending above the amount of money that the government received in taxes.
The situation seemed out of control. The nation's government and business leaders appeared to have no idea how to save the dollar and put people back to work. Hoover was willing to take steps like spending government money to help farmers buy seeds and fertilizer. But he was not willing to give wheat to unemployed workers who were hungry. He created an emergency committee to study the unemployment problem. But he would not launch government programs to create jobs. Hoover called on Americans to help their friends in need. but he resisted calls to spend federal funds for major relief programs to help the millions of Americans facing disaster.
Leaders of the Democratic Party made the most of the situation. They accused the president of not caring about the common man. They said Hoover was willing to spend money to feed starving cattle for businessmen, but not willing to feed poor children. Hoover tried to show the nation that he was dealing with the crisis. He worked with Congress to try to save the banks and to keep the dollar tied to the value of gold. He tried hard to balance the federal budget, and he told Americans that it was not the responsibility of the national government to solve all their problems.
Late in 1931, President Hoover appointed a new committee on unemployment. He named Walter Gifford to head this committee. Gifford was chief of a big company, American Telephone and Telegraph. But Gifford did Hoover more harm than good. When he appeared before Congress, Gifford was unable to defend Hoover's position that relief was the responsibility of local governments and private giving. He admitted that he did not know how many people were out of work. He did not know how many of them needed help, or how much help they needed, or how much money local governments could raise.
The situation grew worse. Some Americans began to completely lose faith in their government. They looked to groups with extreme political ideas to provide answers. Some Americans joined the Communist Party. Others helped elect state leaders with extreme political ideas. And in growing numbers, people began to turn to hatred and violence. However, most Americans remained loyal to traditional values, even as conditions grew steadily worse. They looked ahead to 1932, when they would have a chance to vote for a new president.
Leaders of the Democratic Party felt they had an excellent chance to capture the White House in the election, and their hopes increased when the Republicans renominated President Hoover and Vice President Charles Curtis in the summer of 1932. For this reason, competition was fierce for the Democratic presidential nomination. The top candidate was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the governor of New York State. Roosevelt had been re-elected to that office by a large majority just 2 years earlier. He came from a rich and famous family, but he was seen as a friend of the common man. Roosevelt was conservative in his economic thinking, but he was a progressive in his opinion that government should be active in helping people. Roosevelt had suffered from polio and could not walk. He used a wheelchair, although it was rarely shown in news pictures.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt's two main opponents were Al Smith and John Garner. Smith had been the governor of New York before Roosevelt. Garner, a Texan, was the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Together, they hoped to block Roosevelt's nomination. And they succeeded the first three times that delegates voted at the Democratic Nominating Convention in Chicago. Roosevelt's chief political advisor, James Farley, worked hard to find Roosevelt the votes he needed at the convention. Finally, Farley found a solution. He made a deal with supporters of John Garner. Roosevelt would make Garner the vice presidential nominee if Garner's forces voted to make Roosevelt the presidential nominee. Garner agreed. And on the next vote, the Democratic delegates nominated Franklin Roosevelt to be their presidential candidate. Al Smith was so angry about the deal that he left Chicago without congratulating Roosevelt. Roosevelt wanted to show the nation that he was the kind of man to take action, that he had more imagination than Hoover. So he broke tradition and flew to Chicago. It was the first time a candidate had ever appeared at a convention to accept a nomination. And Roosevelt told the cheering crowd that together they would defeat Hoover.
The main issue in the campaign of 1932 was the economy. President Hoover defended his policies. Roosevelt and the Democrats attacked the administration for not taking enough action. Roosevelt knew that most Americans were unhappy with the Hoover administration. So his plan during the campaign was to let Hoover defeat himself. He avoided saying anything that might make groups of voters think he was too extreme. But Roosevelt did make clear that he would move the federal government into action to help people suffering from the economic crisis. He said he was for a balanced federal budget, but he also said the government must be willing to spend extra money to prevent people from starving.
Americans liked what they heard from Franklin Roosevelt. He seemed strong. He enjoyed life. And Roosevelt seemed willing to try new ideas, to experiment with government. Hoover attacked Roosevelt bitterly during the campaign. He warned that Roosevelt and the Democrats would destroy the American system. But Americans were tired of Hoover. They thought he was too serious, too afraid of change, too friendly with business leaders instead of the working man. Most of all, they blamed Hoover for the hard times of the Depression. On Election Day, Americans voted in huge numbers for Franklin Roosevelt and the Democrats. Roosevelt won 42 of the 48 states at that time. The Democrats also gained a large majority in both houses of Congress.
The election ended 12 years of Republican control of the presidency. It also marked the passing of a long conservative period in American political life. Franklin Delano Roosevelt would become one of the strongest and most progressive presidents in the nation's history. He would serve longer than any other president, changing the face of the country's political and economic systems. Next week, we will report on the beginning of his administration. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. And while you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have heard on this program. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.